Shop early, save big, all month long during Black Friday Build-Up at Lowe's. Right now, get select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at just $59.98. Don't wait to save. Shop these deals today, in-store or online. Because Lowe's knows deals. Discount taken at time of purchase while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Shop early, save big, all month long during Black Friday Build-Up at Lowe's. Right now, get select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at just $59.98. Don't wait to save. Shop these deals today, in-store or online. Because Lowe's knows deals. Discount taken at time of purchase while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hey, folks, thanks for being here for the Woody Overton Window. This is sort of like our first day at college, Woody.
It's
on our own now.
The new inaugural.
The new inaugural. So if you're listening, it means that you've found us, but I'm sure many of you would like to continue listening to the show, but aren't sure exactly where to find us. We are in now all of the normal places you find your podcast. So the show is at Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify. It's on most of these podcatchers you use, podcast apps like Overcast, except remember to search for the Woody Overton Window, not the WOW. The Woody Overton Window is how the show is understood inside of those platforms. And so if you search, you will find us, and please subscribe, and please also let any friends know that that listen to any of the shows historically, that they can find the Woody Overton Window with its own feed on any of those platforms and subscribe there.
Yeah. And share, right?
Absolutely. Share. So Woody, this move has been like the hardest ever move. I mean, every day something else happens that gets worse. And folks, I know you're not watching this, but we'll probably publish the clip. But one of the biggest boxes I had to open the other day was like the icing on the shittiest cake of all time, because I opened that box that weighed a gazillion pounds. And that's where I found my personally autographed Giants original Saquon Barkley jersey. That I wanted to throw out the window of the house when I got it.
But I don't do that. He's beasting up for your enemy, huh?
Fucking A.
Yeah. I wanted to message the other night during that game. That has to be the worst fucking football playing I've ever seen.
Daniel Jones is, yeah. I mean, he has to be the dumbest guy ever to come out of Duke. Like, how can you? He's not one of these. He was just a jock that got into Duke, and then, you know, he leaves and goes to the pros. He's got a Duke diploma, and he's a smart guy and everything like that. You know, book smarts and on the field smarts are two very different things. And his instincts in the pocket are just terrible.
He is so unemployed next year. Not this year.
Well, you know what? Unemployed, but collecting 40-something million-dollar checks while he's unemployed. Or however that works. I guess the guarantee is something lower than that number. But still, these guys, you know, you can make a case. Like CEOs, when they get dumped by their boards, they're holding contracts that are 3, 4, and 5 years. And, you know, they get paid for 5 years to do nothing. Or these coaches, same kind of thing. So I don't know. Well, look, it's Saturday and you're hearing this on Monday. So we got 24 hours to go as you're hearing this to Election Day.
Okay, I even forward to skip.
Any predictions out of the Woody Overton Prediction House?
Politics.
So no bets. You have no bets going.
I'm just keeping my opinion to myself.
Okay, yeah. So I don't get to find out your bets either?
But you damn well better believe what my bet is.
Okay, well, are you betting? Do you think Trump wins one of the blue wall states? Do you think he wins either Michigan, Wisconsin, or Pennsylvania?
I think he wins at least one of them. So, but I can also bet it's going to be a shit show, like you said, afterwards, and you know, lawsuits, and whatever. But you know what? People just need to go fucking vote. I don't hear any bitching and whining. If you didn't vote, then you don't have a voice.
Agree. Well, I know something you must have bet on. We have, and we're going to be talking about Penn State here in a minute. Penn State is hosting Ohio State this morning. Well, a little bit later. I think it's a noon, you know, like 1 o'clock kickoff game.
11 o'clock, actually. Our time, 12 o'clock your time. And it's Penn State plus 3. And I took Penn State.
Penn State is a favorite against Ohio State. When's the last time Penn State was a favorite against Ohio State?
Ohio State isn't that great, not really. I know they're ranked and everything, but you know, it's going to be interesting if they were. Well, their quarterback's supposed to be maybe hurt, Penn State's quarterback, so we'll see how it works out.
Well, this is a very big game for Penn State. They've lost so many big games. Every time they have a chance against a highly, highly ranked team, they have come up short in the James Franklin era. So this would be a very key game for Penn State, and maybe the fact that we're going to talk about Jerry Sandusky and his various appeals and the focus of his appeals this morning, that maybe that'll bring a little bit of good luck to the Nittany Lions. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I hope.
Okay, so, you know, both in 2023 and in 2024, different Sandusky appeals were lost, and the state issued opinions, but those most recent appeals are really the continuation of a series of appeals that center around many of the same overall issues. They're just little nuanced differences between the latest and one that was done in 2021 or one that was done in 2018. But pretty much Sandusky has been in a continuous state of appeal since he was convicted back in June of 2012. I mean, he's been through multiple appeal lawyers and, you know, never given up ship and always been able to have enough people on his side putting up their own personal money to continue to fight his cause, because he's, you know, he had very modest means at the point that he was arrested. So they mortgaged the house, et cetera, to be able to fight that first round by themselves. But now it's different people in the community that are continuing to pay the way for him. But it has yet to yield anything. And as we've talked about before, it's probably one of these things where it has to get onto a federal stage in order for it to have a chance.
Yep, it's a process. It's just like the guy from Livingston Parish said, second longest running person on death row in Louisiana. It's been there for 40 fucking years and it's still doing the appeals process.
That is unbelievable.
His partner in crime has already died on death row. So of old age and shit. Yeah, it is what it is. Appeals process is just fucking stupid. I think, you know, I think they should streamline appeals, like make it a mandatory 2-year deal or something like that to get them through all of them. But then you can't because of the courts, you know, and they're so backed up.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, I think they've got to adopt some digital technology. I mean, I know it's very difficult to protect all the confidences that have to be protected and all the details have to be protected and everything else, but the system could run so much smoother and so much faster if, you know, there was more technology adopted. But, you know, careful what you wish for. We did that with voting and what's happened.
Scott Peterson, which I'm doing on Scorched on Real Life from Crime Original, he's 20 some years in and still appealing. And so I don't think Sandusky's going to live long enough to see the end of his appeals.
No, Menendez brothers, same, you know. But
yeah, fuck them. That's
you know, but unlike those two cases, I think we agree in this case at least there's stuff to be looked at. And you know, most of it stems from the fact that Sandusky, in the summer of 2011, is made aware of the fact that the grand jury has been impaneled, but he is under the belief that this is all about Aaron Fisher and the case involving Aaron Fisher. And, you know, he knows in his mind who Aaron Fisher is. We've seen from various people Zig interviewed in his community of Lock Haven, as well as telling the larger story, what the people at his school actually believed, et cetera. In Sandusky's mind, Aaron Fisher is not a credible person. He's going to get blown out if this thing ever goes to trial. He doesn't need, nor can he afford, a dream team. And so he goes and turns to a local attorney who he knows somewhat. I wouldn't call him a friend, but he's an acquaintance, and a competent state college area attorney who's not really a litigator, but, you know, has been in the city for a lot of years. Jerry knows who he is. His reputation is good. He's an honest man. So he hires Joe Amendola to represent him. And when what he thought was a case being brought because of Aaron Fisher turns into all of these accusers and this monumental case, it is just orders of magnitude bigger than anyone ever believed it could be, and bigger than anything Amendola had ever been strapped with. And they were too far in to turn around.
The deal is, you got it. It's like Daniel Jones being a starting quarterback in the NFL. He's out of his league. And the problem is, state of Pennsylvania, the people that they brought, that's all they do every day is high-profile cases and hammer motherfuckers' asses. And Amendola may have been a lawyer for however long, and he knows the basics, right? And he's literally up against a dream team.
Yeah, exactly. It's on both sides. So on one side, you've got the defense, which comes as a local attorney in state college. Normally, he'd be up against a district attorney from Center County, but because this case went to the attorney general's office, you've got a state attorney here, multiple, who are, you know, the best prosecutors in the state. So it's David versus Goliath, but Sandusky is still so convinced that the truth is on his side and loyal to the local guy that he decides to stay with Amendola. And, you know, that's probably the hiring of Amendola and the subsequent decision to stick with him. It's probably the worst of all the decisions that Sandusky made throughout this thing, because, it definitely limits him in a number of meaningful ways. So after he loses the trial in June of 2012, and then is sentenced in October of 2012, Sandusky immediately files with a new attorney, a guy by the name of Norris Gelman. And Gelman is the first attorney to represent Sandusky in his appeals. He ends up with another, Al Lindsay, later, but they immediately appealed following the sentencing. And there are 22 overall items that form the basis of their appeal. And, you know, I think a number of them are worth going through. So, you know, the very first one asks, and these all fall under the heading of ineffectiveness of counsel. So the appeal is based upon the belief that Sandusky did not get fair representation from Amendola. So the first one is they ask whether the court erred in finding that Amendola performed effectively in his decision to allow Sandusky to be interviewed by Bob Costas without adequately advising him and prepping him for the interview.
That's Excuse me. You know, he said what he said. You can bring all you want to. He may have still said it. But, they're definitely going to deny that shit. We're going to continue to deny. We know they've denied it thus far. They're going to continue to deny. And when he says, do you like little boys or whatever? And he said whatever he said. I mean,
he repeats the question. Do I like young boys or whatever it was? I agree with you. I mean, it's Sandusky's a big boy. It's his decision whether he's going to do it or not. I think most defense attorneys would not have asked their client to do it. At the time, they thought they had Alan Myers, victim number two, on their side firmly, and that was going to be the big moment of the case, and that they were going to unveil it on Costas, and then things fell apart immediately after that with victim number two. So I'm with you on that one, and he has never gotten anywhere on that complaint. The second one involves whether Amendola was ineffective for not seeking a mistrial after prosecutors improperly made multiple comments based upon Sandusky's silence, meaning Sandusky refusing to take the stand later, and comments that Sandusky made in the Costas interview, some things he said involving McQueary, but the prosecution is not supposed to be able to attack the accused for not taking the stand. And I think it was McGettigan, not Fina, that did this. And he actually did do it.
Yeah, but the problem with that is, and you're right, that he should have said something. The problem it is, Amendola being a dumbass is the defense. He should have said it during trial. You're a trial lawyer. That's your job. You missed it. You're fucked. It's like, speeding down the highway. If you're going 75, you're taking a chance. And sooner or later, you get caught. And Amendola not objecting to everything just makes him a dumbass. You can't go back and play armchair quarterback on each one of these things and say, fuck, if Amendola had done all of it, and everything would have been perfect, right? There'd be no appeals. And he just fucked it up again. And yes, he should have said, absolutely. He could say it. And if he doesn't object, that's on him. That's on Sandusky's personal choice for this lawyer. And so the court's not going to uphold that.
Right. And what you're saying is so true. I mean, this plays out where it's like we're doing post-game analysis.
Right.
And you look at the game and you go, okay, there were so many bad decisions made during the game that could have affected the outcome of the game. Absolutely. But you made the decisions during the game that you made. And so now you're stuck with the outcome of the game.
That is correct.
And, maybe the refs made some bad calls along the way, but mostly it was decisions you made that, and really, really difficult in this circumstance, because this guy really lost before he went to trial. So you can only appeal what happens at trial and the evidence that's brought in and all that stuff. You can't go back to that play in the second quarter where you called the wrong play and go in and pick the game back up from there. And, we see that with everything here. Like the third one's a huge one. They decide that they're not going to call Alan Myers as a witness. Right. So, Jerry knew what his relationship with Myers was. Myers had made the statements. He had given the testimony to Amendola's investigator. He had been as out there as anyone about Jerry's innocence before he turned to an accuser. And they decide not to put him in as a witness. And the state, and I thought that this was really, really cagey and, a little bit sleazy of the state to, the state just played like they didn't believe that Alan Myers was victim number two. And so they let the whole trial go by without ever declaring him as victim two, without him ever testifying anywhere. And it's not until after the trial is over and Sandusky's been convicted that all of a sudden he comes out and he's a victim. And if you remember, it was McGettigan saying that, you know, his name is known only to God in his closing statement, when he darn well knew who the guy was. And so, and, you know, from Sandusky's appeal side, it's ineffectiveness to call this witness to the stand using his prior exculpatory statements that that Sandusky did not molest him, and that McQuarrie lied about how McQuarrie described the incident that night. Well, they don't put him on. And then another piece of the appeal is that he was not available. And no one knew where he was, part of things where, you know, you have sort of the folklore of he was hiding in a cabin in the woods thing. And so they ultimately rule again that this was a strategic decision, that there's no proof that the guy was in a cabin somewhere and was unavailable. You can't prove that, or he didn't prove that. And so
somebody had come forward in this appeal process and say, yes, we intentionally, they told us to hide him in a cabin so he couldn't testify, that he'd get a new trial. But that's not what happened. Yeah, the deal being is they just fucked up. Being a dumbass is not an excuse. You're not going to get a new trial for being a dumbass. And, you know, if they're hiding Brady evidence or something like that, it's got to be something that's really outlandish. Even like fucking Peterson case again, that two hairs, or the hairs on the duct tape has been excluded for being Scott Peterson's, but it hasn't been excluded for being Lacey's. I mean, why the fuck wouldn't you test it for Lacey?
Right, right. 20
years later, now I see that, but 20 years later, that's a legit deal. I mean, this is on duct tape on a body that's been floating in the bay for months. And it's very reasonable to assume that had it been tested for sex offenders or whoever the fuck, and the advances in DNA. And on this one, you got to have a smoking gun, man.
Hey, ladies, are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? Well, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living in our environment right now. It's in your food, your water, the air you breathe, the clothes you wear, your skincare products. They all mess with your hormones. Then there's the natural hormone changes your body goes through, premenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean you have to suffer through it. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore, because now you have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone support and supplement, it's become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Well, my wife says it makes her feel like her own self again. And that's what women mention over and over in the reviews. And there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code RLRC for 15% off today. That's HAPPYMAMMOTH.com and use code RLRC. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts to spark joy, wonder, delight, and that's exactly what I want it feeling. Hey, y'all, I ordered a super cool piece. It's a candle with a sculpture of LSU Tiger Stadium on top of it. And each officially licensed laser cut wooden replica features up to 4 layers of detail, creating a bird's eye view of a specific football field, seating section, and more. And every label includes your stadium's name, the team's logo, and school location. And it has a coconut, soy, vegan wax infused with sandalwood smell that creates tailgates and touchdown scent profile, reminiscent of game day. It's invigorating like fresh cut grass and nostalgic like smoke from a pre-game grill and calming like the crisp autumn air of a new semester on campus. Y'all, I love it. I have it at the base of my TV and I'm ready to watch the Tigers play on Saturday night, right? Uncommon Goods. Look, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches. So shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize. From holiday hosts and hostess gifts to the coolest finds for kids to hits for everyone from the book lovers to diehard sports fans, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selection you can just find anywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/RLRC. That's uncommongoods.com/RLRC for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's so right. And again, the prosecutors claim that they didn't believe that Alan Myers was victim two anyway. So the only information I had that alleged that he was in fact a victim of Sandusky came from Alan Myers' attorney, Mr. Shubin, who refused to allow us to contact him and confirm whatever his client had to say until after Mike McQuarrie testified. And I believe at the hearing that one of Mr. Shubin's associates was present to listen to the details of McQuarrie's observations, after which Mr. Shubin attempted to force Alan Myers on us because now he had, as some would say, an opportunity to conform the testimony of Myers to that of McQuarrie. So it's crazy what the prosecution gets away with here, is they get to claim that Myers isn't victim two, and someone who they were clearly in cahoots with, Shubin, his attorney, they say won't let them get in touch with Myers. And so they challenge Shubin, that Shubin was holding him back because Shubin wanted to hear McQuarrie's testimony so he could match Myers' testimony to McQuarrie's. And so the prosecution takes the point of view that Alan Myers wasn't victim two, and then Penn State goes and pays him $7.5 million because he's victim two.
Right. Stupid.
It's just freaking nuts. And a jury doesn't get to truly understand what happened there. And yes, they don't convict Sandusky on the worst of the counts in the quote-unquote boy in the shower McQuarrie / Alan Myers incident, but they do convict him on the lesser charges. So the incident is still considered a sex crime. It's just not the anal rape that was in the presentment. And so the jury is left believing this was a sexual assault, even though the evidence existed to prove that it wasn't. So crazy.
Yeah.
So moving on, the fourth big item was that Amendola erred in determining in failing to present the grand jury testimonies of the administrators, Tim Curley, Gary Schultz, and Graham Spanier. So Sandusky claimed that Amendola was ineffective because he failed to present the grand jury testimony from those guys, and that grand jury testimony would have impeached McQuarrie's testimony regarding Alan Myers. And so, you know, I think Amendola's thought was, well, they've all been charged with perjury for those testimonies given to the grand jury. And so am I going to present as evidence their testimony, which they are being prosecuted for as perjury?
Oh, and it's like 2020, or you got to try something. Yeah.
The fifth one is similar to the one about not putting Alan Myers on the stand, except in this particular case, it's Matt Sandusky. So, and man, they should have put Matt Sandusky on. I mean, they could have just destroyed Matt Sandusky. And so the decision to not put Matt Sandusky on, you know, again, it's a strategic decision made between an attorney and his client. And
he just can't come back.
You know, I don't know how.
I want a do over. I fucked up. I want a do over. You know?
Exactly.
If they were something that they came out with right now that, you know, would have to be heard. It's like you said, this is a technical error on the coach's side. Hey, just ran their own fucking play. Hey, you had the choice, and it's not, you don't get a do-over because you're a fucking idiot.
Now, the fifth one's a little bit different because the fifth one alleges that, again, Amendola was ineffective because he didn't argue that evidence that was discovered later showed that allegations made by Aaron Fisher, made by Dustin Struble, made by Matt Sandusky, that all of them changed as a result of undergoing repressed memory therapy. So that wasn't known at trial, but became known afterward, or at least in Sandusky and his appeal counsel's mind, it became known afterward. The prosecution's defense against this was that, no, Mike Gillum, who was the therapist who treated Aaron Fisher, doesn't believe in repressed memory therapy and says he never used it with Fisher, even though the defense uses the most renowned expert on repressed memory, this Dr. Elizabeth Loftus, as an expert witness during the appeal hearing. And she provides expert testimony that absolutely what these individuals and others had gone through was repressed memory therapy. It was rejected. Don't really understand how they decided that one.
Again, and I'll tell you, because the court looks at it and they say, if this person, if they had put on, first of all, it was there. If this person, his testimony had, you know, if the jury had given an X amount of weight or the judge, it's gotta be something that's, repressed memory therapy is subject, right? Suspect one way or another, you got people for, people against it. And the judge is like, nobody showed me anything else that to the contrary. Does that make sense what I'm saying? That it's got to be something from both sides, and the judge has to say, well, the lack of this would have changed the outcome of the jury. There's nothing saying that produce somebody about repressed memories then saying that that was debunked, that the other side wouldn't have got somebody to say yes, but they're good. See what I'm saying?
Except that it was inadmissible. So the state had already determined that testimony based upon from someone who's received repressed memory therapy is not admissible in Pennsylvania court.
And then
they ruled was that they did not go through repressed memory.
Why would you go through it if it's not admissible? I'm saying, even on appeal, if it's not admissible, then there's no reason to appeal it because you couldn't have got it in anyway.
No. Their appeal is admissible. Oh, I see what you're saying is the fact that the court heard from them means the court had already ruled that it wasn't repressed.
That is correct.
Memory. Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Cause that's basically what happened here. So I'm just looking for the note from the court. So I mentioned Gillum, and during direct testimony, Dr. Gillum plainly and credibly stated, I don't deal with repressed memory and I don't work with anyone who claims to have repressed memories or anything along those lines. Dr. Loftus had a different opinion based upon impressions she derived from Dr. Gillum's book and statements that Dustin Struble had made 2 years after the trial, and the fact that the victims whose excerpted trial testimony she reviewed did not give consistent stories to the police, the grand jury, and the trial jury. But again,
the problem with what you said there is opinion. It's opinions. And if they had Yeah, secret tapes of him coaching him in the repressed memory stuff, whatever. And he gets on the stand and says, no, I don't do that. And then they can show this evidence, then he's fucked. But right now it's opinions. And the jury has to weigh in on whatever they weigh in on.
And next is them alleging two Brady violations that, again, Amendola didn't address. The first of which deals with Dustin Struble's testimony that he testified for the first time at trial that Sandusky would give him bear hugs in the shower, kissed him and touched him skin to skin. Struble told prosecutor McGettigan of these changes several months before trial, but McGettigan never disclosed this material to the defense. So
yeah, if they could
this victim that, changes they- his story and they put him, they have him testify, and it's a completely different testimony than he's given prior. And the prosecution never provided any updated statements from him to the defense.
Yeah, and if they can prove that, then this is one thing they'll have a leg to stand on. But prove it. They got to prove it. And then they'll fight that tooth and nail. I'm sure the prosecution will. But Brady, you just can't fuck around with Brady. I mean, all it's going to do is get him a new trial. And then, yeah, you know, which is, I don't know what he wants, but it doesn't mean guilty.
Yes, who says Sandusky claims that had Amendola been aware, quote, that counseling and therapy was used to alter the accuser's stories and or help them to remember allegations of abuse, counsel would have filed a pretrial motion and sought an expert witness in order to challenge the witness's competency. To succeed on a Brady claim, a defendant must show that, one, the evidence at issue was favorable to the accused, either because it's exculpatory or because it impeaches, or two, the evidence was suppressed by the prosecution, either willfully or inadvertently, and three, it was prejudicial. Amendola, so the judge rejects the argument, but agreed that the Commonwealth could inquire about whether the same traits defining, different part of it. They admonish, so that the judge admonishes the prosecutors for what they did, but says that it wouldn't have changed anything. So nothing comes about as a result of it. And so we continually have those kinds of back and forths throughout here. Okay. So a big one is the preliminary decision to not have a preliminary hearing. According to Amendola, this again was a strategy discussion, and the belief was that Sandusky at the time was home on house arrest, having paid a significant bail. Two new accusers had come forward, and so if they were going to go through a preliminary hearing, the state would have had the opportunity to increase his bail based upon those two new victims. He was out of money. That would have gotten into the press about additional victims. And so they decided to eliminate the preliminary hearing because it was problematic for Sandusky. And again, another one of those decisions that, yeah, it's something you did during the ball game that didn't work out well for you in the end, but you can't come back after the fact, just like the Costas thing, et cetera.
It's not ground. It's just fun. And that's the truth. You know what? Had they had the preliminary exam, they'd have known, oh, shit. They had
to. Yep.
That's where he really got fucked in this case. Is that one was the biggest one of all, but it's not overturnable on appeal. It's just you were a dumbass. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and what did come out was that the way that they did that, so the judge was involved. Cleland held a meeting at the Hilton Garden Inn, and you know, McGettigan and Amendola are there. You know, he basically says, we got to speed this thing up. There's no reason for the preliminary hearing. If you do it, then, you know, bail's going to go up. Basically coordinates with the prosecutors to put Amendola in a corner to where he and Sandusky really don't have much of a choice to make. And so they do what they did. And I agree with you totally that that's such a key moment, because that would have given you the prosecution's case. And now you have a chance to actually go and invest the money you need to invest in investigating everything before you get to a courtroom.
You also would have known you're up against an A team, right? I mean, it's a mini trial. It's all it is. It's a free shot for the defense to get shit thrown out, which is, he definitely needed that. And, you know, otherwise you wouldn't have these other things on appeal. And then you get everything they get, and you get their top lawyers are going to be doing it, and they're presenting all the cops, and they're presenting whatever, the victim statements, and you could have cherry picked to rip that shit apart, but you didn't do it. Dumb.
Yeah. Big, big miss. Another one is that Amendola did not investigate juror bias, that he failed to procure an expert report that would have shown that a change of venue or a continuance was warranted, for not requesting a change of venue or seeking a cooling off period, and in neglecting to question the jurors specifically about the information they had heard from the media. I mean, there's no doubt that the amount of media attention around this case at that time was unprecedented. And it certainly seems like one of those cases where you could make a very strong argument that a change of venue is needed, right?
Yeah, but he never did it. It's again, it's his fault. Yeah, you can look at it on all these things. They're fucked up, right? But they're fucked up because Amendola and Sandusky fucked it up. They made the decision not to do it.
Well, but since the appeal is about ineffectiveness of counsel, it's actually Amendola is testifying here, defending himself and against Sandusky, because what he's doing is he's saying, well, yeah, we thought about that. We had discussions about it, and Sandusky thought, these are my people. They know me. If this is a national story, it's everywhere. It's not just here. If I'm going to have an advantage anywhere, it's here. And
that was his decision. No, obviously, those people were out for blood. He should have removed it, in my opinion, taken it anywhere else but Happy Valley.
Yeah, no, that major, major, major screw up on that one. We really didn't talk about this much, but at a point in time, there's some kind of communication screw up between Amendola and Sandusky, where Amendola puts this supposed expert, a Dr. Elliot Atkins, on the stand. And Atkins describes a condition that he believes Sandusky suffers from, and it's called histrionic personality disorder. You know, Elliot explains that this is where an adult can have, you know, inappropriate sort of contact with younger people out of a psychological problem where they see themselves as kids. And I mean, it's kind of a crazy reach, but you know, he's recognizing how weird all this stuff looks to normal people, and he's bringing a witness in to speak to that. But then the fact that he's brought this witness in, obviously the prosecution is allowed to cross, and on cross they ask the guy if these same traits he's talking about wouldn't also be present in a pedophile.
Yes. They should have seen that one coming too. I mean,
come on.
Yeah, I'm not even a lawyer, and that's exactly what I would ask.
Ridiculous. And so in this particular case, it's, again, ineffectiveness of counsel. Sandusky saying, I knew nothing about who this freaking guy was. And Amendola decides to put him on the stand and you know, hands the prosecution, gets the guy to say, oh yeah, these same things could be easily present in a pedophile.
And really what they're going to rule on this is that his testimony wouldn't have changed the outcome of the trial one way or the other. committed to, certainly he got his point across that he wanted to make, and the state got across the point they want to make, and the jury has to decide.
Yeah. Nuts. I mean, just nuts. One that I thought was that the judge really mishandled originally in the trial, that the appeal judge really mishandled, is this whole thing around Sarah Ganim and the protection from testifying that she sought. There's also the motion to withdraw, which we need to talk about. Yeah, so it's number 16, I believe, where they had proof of the leaks coming out of the office of the Attorney General, and they failed to call Sarah Ganim to the stand and force her to answer questions about the leaks.
Hey, y'all, let me tell you about Gobble. All Gobble meal kits are pre-prepped. That means less work for you and less waste in your kitchen. Their meal kits include everything you need so you can save time at the store or just skip that trip entirely. I got the box in and I had three different meals. I had a Kung Pao chicken, crispy fish tacos, and a beef bourguignon. However you say it, but let me tell you about the classic beef bourguignon. Look, it came with beef pot roast and a beef broth concentrate, red wine demi-glace, cremini mushrooms, cipollone onions, mashed potatoes, baby carrots, and rosemary thyme butter. It was so easy to make. Literally like 15 minutes it took Cindy. And let me tell you something, all the dishes were fire, but this thing was like a taste explosion in my mouth. It's just unreal. We've got to spend more time together and more time doing the things we love because everything came in this one single box right to my door. So see what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering my listeners a fantastic limited time deal. You get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. And let me tell you, those cookies, I ate one that was sin-baked, and it was delicious. Go to gobble.com/real life. That's gobble.com/real life for $120 off your first four boxes. This offer is not available on the home site, so don't miss out. This is genius. It's taste explosions in your mouth like you never had. Hey, y'all, changing my wardrobe from summer to fall, it's never easy. Luckily, Quince offers timeless and high-quality items I adore, ensuring my wardrobe stays fresh and I don't blow my budget. And there's nothing easier than going to Quince and choosing these high-quality items, like cashmere sweaters from $50, pants for every occasion, washable silk tops, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, and I love that. I got the stainless steel Link Apple Watch band for $59.90. It's heavy duty, it's awesome, and it's like $100 less than I could find anywhere else. And I also got 100% organic cotton fisherman quarter zip up sweater. The color is alabaster. Man, I can't wait to wear that this fall. And Cindy got the Mongolian cashmere boat neck sweater in heather gray. And I'm telling you, these are classic pieces at a fraction of the price. Make switching seasons a breeze with Quince's high-quality closet essentials. Go to quince.com/RLRC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/RLRC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/RLRC. You'll thank me later.
The prosecutors all individually claimed that they knew nothing about any such leaks. And then she sought protection under a state rule 804, which applies to the confidentiality of sources, that she cannot be forced to give up her sources. But you know, if her sources were illegal leaks coming from the government in an attempt to get news out into the public, in an attempt to draw fresh victims to the party, she doesn't get that protection, is the position of the Sandusky appeal. The judge rules in favor of the prosecution here. Don't know. Nothing I've read made any sense as to how he came about that.
He should at least held like a private thing, made her show him in his chambers. The motherfucker proved to me this wasn't illegal. You know, and then if you can't, yeah, it's a big fucking lawsuit. This fucking, I won't say hippie motherfuckers, but the people in the first, the free speech shit and protection and all that, they go fucking ape shit on that kind of stuff. But if I was a judge, I'd have made her, you know, so we wouldn't be talking about this however many years later. I would have made her come in my chambers and show me. So I'm not going to say anything, but you show me that this wasn't illegal. If you can't, then fuck you. I'm good. We'll do what we have to do.
Well, and then they got Amendola to agree that he would not call her to the stand if the state stipulated that Ganem did contact the two mothers, the mother of Aaron Fisher, a victim one, and the mother of victim six, Zach Constance, which she did, and she used those mothers to recruit other victims. So they stipulated to that, but the meaning of the entire thing got lost on the jury, got lost in the courtroom, and she was able to hide under this shield law. And I mean, none of that was a decision Sandusky made. I mean, none of that was mistakes on the part of the defense team. It was protecting the prosecution and this reporter from explaining where she got her information from. And that information was obviously key to creating all the hysteria that got created, key to generating additional accusers to come forward. I mean, it's just a huge part of this case that is, you know, for the most part, not known or understood by people. And again, that one, while many of the decisions made by the court, you can understand as, you know, don't come to me crying about your bad strategy. This was one where, no, I mean, come on. You got to know.
Yep, I agree with you on that one. This one has more legs than anything else in this appeals.
And I think the last one that is worth bringing up is that the court erred in holding that Amendola was not ineffective for not filing a collateral appeal after the denial of his motion to withdraw. And so he files to withdraw from the case in early June. And there's, I mean, the amount of info was staggering. I mean, the like 1900 boxes of discovery. I mean, all of this stuff that gets dropped on them weeks before the trial. And he has, you know, he's a little small town lawyer. He's got the Rominger, the one other attorney working with him. It's just two of them. And they've got all these boxes to go through. They can't possibly get through it all. And the judge refuses to allow for a continuance. We already talked about that. Three different times he refuses a continuance, and he refuses to allow Amendola to quit. And that's weeks before the trial. And I guess one of the other items worth mentioning because it's something that Amendola missed amongst those 1900 boxes of evidence. In there was a tape of an interview with the custodian, Calhoun, who says three times on that tape that it was not Sandusky that he saw in the locker room in 2000. And so that doesn't get into the trial. What instead gets into the trial is Petrosky under the excited utterance ruling of Cleland is allowed to present hearsay evidence that Sandusky was forcing a boy to have to give him oral sex in that locker room in 2000, and that Calhoun at the time told him it was Sandusky. Sandusky got convicted on every one of those counts, while there was evidence, clearly exculpatory evidence, exonerating Sandusky from this guy, Calhoun, given years before he was declared to have any kind of dementia. And they just danced circles around Amendola on that one. You know, on one hand, you're ruling you can't get more time, you can't quit, and on appeal, I'm not acknowledging that your attorney was ineffective because he didn't review this piece of audio evidence. The appeals court found that Petrosky's testimony would have been enough to have gotten those convictions, even in the face of recording from the actual guy saying it wasn't Sandusky. I don't know how they come up with that.
You know what it all goes back to? He would have found out that he was married. So he didn't do it. You know, get the preliminary examination, you're going to have everything. He had much stronger legs to stand on had he done the preliminary examination. And they did the document dump on him 2 weeks before trial. Yeah. You have no fucking idea what these guys have because you're an idiot.
Well, obviously that's your biggie, and I agree with you. I mean, that is the first major sin here by Amendola, the first time he got outplayed here, because they were in no position to plan a defense because they didn't know any of the plays the offense was going to run.
Yeah.
And then you have all these other things that pile up, from, you know, Sarah Ganim to the stuff with the janitors to not being able to, not calling Schultz or Spanier or their grand jury testimony. I mean, all of these different pieces, the evidence that comes out after trial of repressed memory. I mean, when you think about everything we learned after the fact versus what was known at the time, I think somebody now, armed with all of the evidence that has come out, if there was a new trial, I don't see how he doesn't get off in a new trial.
Well, it's good. You know, he'd definitely have a shot. They could tear this apart piece by piece. But the problem with that is, if he gets a new trial, the prosecution is going to come back better prepared than they ever were. You know, they'll have time to find more people, and they're going to get all these fucking payments in, and all these people, and you know, that's a double edged sword. But if he gets it, he gets it.
Can someone file? Let's say Sandusky passes away next year, dies in prison next year. Can Dottie? Can anybody else, if he is dead, continue the process?
It's a good question. I wouldn't think so. His deal. I mean, I don't know. Maybe if he can put it in his will or something. I don't know. I'll have to look that up.
Because, I mean, increasingly, it looks like, you know, you got to have more distance from the players that were there at the times. You know, the power brokers that are still in power positions, people like Ira Lubert, they all have to be retired or, you know, out of the mix or passed away for the true fresh look without bias to come into this. And, you know, unfortunately, Sandusky's probably long gone before that happens.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. And, you know, witnesses change and people die and, you know, whatever, but I don't think we're ever going to get to know, because he's never going to get another shot, not based on this.
Well, dude, I think the environment is changing a little bit. I think if Trump wins next week, I think the environment in Hollywood is going to change. It's going to shift a little bit. And stories like this, where I got doors shut in my face everywhere I went. I mean, you think about, shoot, I was looking last night and there were like four different Menendez brothers things on Netflix. Are you freaking kidding me?
And this on Scott Peterson, they had like four new ones and he fucking shit on his wife. Yeah.
And how many more twists and turns, how much more drama, how much more intricacy is there in this case than there is in the, now maybe that makes the story harder to tell. And so it's, maybe it's not as sexy, but this is a story that still needs to be told in with pictures and with a real budget and, you know, the real facts and let America, you know, make a decision. And if, you know, if a couple of documentaries can pull that much public sentiment toward two guys who, you know, blew their heads off of their parents, I think people can be impacted by the facts coming out in this case.
Yeah, I get it. And so I guess we'll see, huh? So who do you think is going to win the election? I didn't get to ask you.
I think Trump is going to win. I think. But nothing would surprise me.
Yeah, me either. And it wouldn't surprise me if motherfuckers don't ride and shit if he does win. But
I just hope whoever wins, it's not close and it doesn't.
Yes.
And so things don't get crazy.
CNN, when the last Trump election, and they started out in the beginning, you know, he's losing a lot of money and they were crying. Shit.
No, it's nuts what's going on out there. But I tell you, there are other things like, you know, we've talked about my personal issues and, you know, I've become very educated on what's going on with marijuana in this country and the, you know, the power, the THC levels of the cannabis that these kids are smoking today is so much stronger, 5, 10, 15 times stronger than what we had back in the day. And you have all of these states, like Florida has it right now on the ballot to legalize in the state. And, you know, I've been in this situation where I'm seeing kids 20 years old, 19 years old, 22 years old that developed, you know, the kind of pot smoking habits that we knew plenty of guys had back in the day. And because of the strength of the pot that these guys are smoking, you have psychosis happening with, I mean, these kids are going crazy and nobody's talking about it because it's a booming industry. People are making shitloads of money. The states want the money.
2 or 3 years ago, Colorado's largest industry, Coors Light, the taxes from the marijuana sales outsurpassed everything that the whole state was doing. And that's when everybody else started legalizing it. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know the answer to that either. And I just hope everybody goes and vote.
If you're voting in a state where pot is on the ballot, folks, I mean, no. I mean, just no. I mean, not state doesn't need money that way. I mean, kids are, I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
It's destroying lives and it's amazingly strong, this stuff that they're, and that's not even talking about fentanyl and all the other risks associated with what's going on out there. So anyway, vote those issues as well as voting for your candidate and we'll see how, I don't know if we'll see, probably we'll be recording next week and we won't know yet what the heck happened, but
it'll be interesting. So.
All right, buddy.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Go Penn State.
Yeah, all right.
Taglets.
We're going to see. Peace.
Shop early. Save big. All month long during Black Friday buildup at Lowe's. Right now, get select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at just $59.98. Don't wait to save. Shop these deals today, in-store or online. Because Lowe's knows deals. Discount taken at time of purchase. While supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.